Welcome, everyone, to the Thursday afternoon edition of Renegade Radio. As always, I am your host, Andy Lowe. We're brought to you today by Renegade Concepts and the good folks here at Business Radio X. And as always, we are going to be talking about breaking the rules of conventional thinking, defying conventional norms and limitations to create success both in your business or in your life. And today I'm joined by a very special guest from Higher Profile. I've got the president and founder, Miss Nancy Bailey. Nancy, how are you today?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
All right. So Nancy and I have been discussing lunchtime nutrition and the varsity, as well as pricing moves. Apparently, you can't get a hamburger for 50 cents or a chili dog for 75 anymore.
$1.74,
and it's the size of an Oreo cookie, I hear.
Yes.
So, and not nearly as tasty. No, just kidding. Anybody from the varsity listening, we'll give you a second shot, but not at $1.75.
Yeah,
there you have it.
Where's the beef?
Where's the beef? There you go. All right. Well, anyway, let's jump right in. Tell us a little bit about Higher Profile and who you guys are and what you do. And I'm kind of interested to find out because, ironically, today I was clicking on another webpage, and sure enough, how the little ads come up in the sidebars. One came up for your company, and I was like, interesting, she's going to be on the radio today. So
wow.
I figured I'd wait and let you tell me the good news of what you do.
Okay. Well, Higher Profile is a creative staffing and recruiting firm. We're based here in Atlanta, and we are going to celebrate our 10-year anniversary next year. We are a virtual company, so that's one of the things that we're going to talk about today. But what we do is staffing and recruiting of freelancers and permanent employees in the marketing, advertising, graphic design industry. So ad agencies, corporate marketing departments, boutique studios, and any other kind of company who might need to either outsource a creative project like a website or a brochure, as well as bring people on site to fill in for vacations or extra workload and need an extra pair of hands. And we help source, monitor, track, register all of the freelance creative types in Atlanta and keep a database on them so we can, you know, accurately match them to the right opportunities, not only for their career, but obviously to give a good value to our clients.
Well, before we jump into virtual companies, I mean, let's talk a little bit about that aspect of your business. I mean, what's the talent pool like right now when it comes to the creative marketing? I mean, how many people are in your database currently available?
You know, I don't have it separated out by contacts versus candidates because we do have one database that has both our clients and our, but I know when we export it, it's well over 9,000. So I would say probably about 5,000 of those would be candidates, and they can range from permanent creative directors, you know, six-figure people, all the way to, you know, production artists looking for fill-in work in between other projects. So it's a wide variety, but we do have the capability of tracking all of their experience, their industries, their samples, their URLs, everything in one place. So we're a really good, quick way to find exactly what you're looking for and to navigate the creative landscape can be very difficult, especially for people outside of the creative industry themselves. So if you are a guy who works at an insurance company and you know you need a copywriter for a brochure, you probably don't have a deep Rolodex on Atlanta's top copywriters, but that's why you would just call us.
Yeah, not only that, if you go searching for one, there's probably a lot of people out there that think they're creative and they're really not.
Yeah.
So you kind of got to weed through a lot of that too, right?
Welcome to my world.
So tell us about the spectrum of companies that would use a service like this. I mean, because it sounds like it would meet a wide range of needs.
It is, and we're kind of agnostic to the type of companies that call us. You know, we work with Fortune 100 companies. We work with, you know, a lot of the big companies here in Atlanta, UPS, Kimberly-Clark, you know, the names that you all know are here. But then we also can help a two-person design boutique that's working out of their basement when they get a project that might be a little bit outside of their capabilities. They might need a copywriter and they don't keep one on staff. They're designers. And so they come to us for things that they can't perform. And we can come in right when they're estimating those jobs to the client and help them at the very beginning. And then we also help other agencies who have, you know, just overflow work. So we can help people of all different sizes as long as the jobs themselves stay within that creative niche, because we really don't go outside of that. We kind of pride ourselves on not getting too deep into IT. And these are areas that we admit that we don't know anything about. So we stay with creative, marketing, advertising, design, and have created a very solid understanding of that area.
Thinking about that, I mean, how has social media impacted your business, either in expansion or have you guys shied away from it and said that's really not our wheelhouse?
Actually, we have had some good success with helping companies find social media freelancers. And what the real impact, though, on social media for us is our ability to reach candidates and contacts through Twitter, Facebook, and we've actually just yesterday, I believe, set up our first Pinterest boards where we're going to be tracking, you know, some of our top freelancers and showing the design that we love and admire. So social media has been great for higher profile. As far as huge companies like the Kimberly Clarks of the world, I'm sorry I keep mentioning them, but they're one of my favorites.
If they were my client, I'd keep naming them.
Yeah, they just come to mind.
Have I mentioned UPS?
You know, we haven't seen as much business coming from them saying, okay, it's time for us to have a full-time social media, you know, staff position. However, a lot of that is done by their agencies of record and other means. But we definitely have people, and we have helped many businesses, you know, blog and do things that they need maybe a ghostwriter for.
I got you. Well, let's shift gears a little bit. I mean, you mentioned in your introduction, you talked about virtual companies. I mean, let's dig into that. So first off, what is a virtual company?
Well, a virtual company, at least in the area that I'm an expert in, is when you have a group of people working out of their individual homes, but they're all linked through technology. So we act as though we are one company and we have one voice and one presence, but we all have different physical locations. And it was a conscious decision when I started the business in 2003 to work out of my home for lifestyle reasons. And it has attracted other employees that I was able to hire that I would not have been able to attract if I had had a set brick and mortar location, because they would not have been able to physically get there at the office during office hours. They had children, ailing parents. I mean, we've dealt with all kinds of things, you know, pregnancies where they're sick every 10 minutes. And they said, look, I can work from home, but I cannot physically go to an office every day, you know, due to one of these other reasons, or I just need part-time. So it actually widened the candidate pool for us as for agents, because we were able to offer kind of that luxury of being able to work from home.
So conventional thought, I need to have my employees or my team in my office, in my space, right? So I can see them, touch them, control what's going on, manage everybody, et cetera, right? That's long been the traditional thought. This is very non-conventional, right?
So last week.
Yeah, right. So tell us about, I mean, what are some of the benefits? Obviously, I can attract a larger talent pool. What else can I do by expanding virtually versus having people under my roof?
Well, really, it comes down to two different areas, I think, for me. One of them is the cost savings of having a virtual company. If you want to save money and therefore maybe even afford an additional salary because you're not paying rent, you're not buying everybody their own computer, you're not paying utilities, you're not buying office furniture, you're not paying phone bills, that may allow you to grow faster because you might get an assistant that you not normally would be able to afford. And so I selfishly said, I would rather have another person doing my work than sit in a marble office. So that was a choice that I made at the very beginning. That was very important to me. The other thing is work-life balance. And work-life balance, especially for a lot of women, and I think men now are feeling it as they become Mr. Moms and doing some other role reversals, and I think that's wonderful. This allows a lot of work-life balance in that, you know, you're not commuting, you're able to possibly be more flexible on your hours. We do keep pretty strict office hours, but the opportunity to come in and check things in the evening, if you had to leave at 3 o'clock, it's like, look, I'll come back for 2 hours in the afternoon. That works for us. And so there are definitely some benefits, I think, to the virtual work environment that you just can't have when you have a brick and mortar space.
Now, I wonder if you've got any numbers on this, and maybe you don't. At least you can talk in general terms if you don't have specifics. But, you know, going back to the conventional thought, I need to have my people here so I can monitor what's going on, right? But isn't it true that performance is actually seen to go up as people are able to engage this work-life balance?
And I don't have statistics on that, but I will tell you from my experience, you actually have to hire a higher quality employee who is much more independent, who doesn't need a lot of supervision. And so it forces you to interview for different mindset. If I was interviewing and I felt that somebody needed that handholding and they want a giant employee manual and they want to refer to page 68 because that's not in the manual, then they're probably not the appropriate person for a virtual work environment. You need people who you can truly trust. You will set up probably more tracking and monitoring software than you might if you were right there hearing every phone call, seeing all the activities of an office. You know, we use Salesforce, and there's just a little button that says log a call. And I can pull up at any time during the day, at the end of the week before our staff meeting, and I can see exactly how many calls everybody made. So it's there if you need it, but the trust has to be there, and it will probably be, you will be tested. But if you can trust these people, I think you will actually empower them, and they feel like they're actually running a little bit of the company themselves. They kind of have their own desk. And that empowerment, I do think, raises performance.
How do you define some of those performance metrics that you're going to want to pay attention to? Because, you know, I mean, I'm thinking that if you look at, again, the conventional model, because you clock in and you clock out, per se, right, then people often, what, you know, we've heard referred to as ride the clock, right? They're there, but the performance standards don't matter as much as that you're here from 8 to 5. But in this environment, it doesn't matter if you're there 8 to 5 or not, so much as do you get something done? How do you set up those standards?
Well, like I mentioned, we use Salesforce. So there's a lot of things that you can find inside software, especially now we're in a service-based business. We're also in a commission-based business. So it's a little bit easier for me because my people, you know, their performance is relative to their paycheck. You know,
right.
If they're
you don't perform, you don't get paid. Thanks
exactly.
For coming.
I mean, so they know. We all know when they're not performing is because it is pretty easy to tell on Fridays. However, with software and with tracking, and we use a lot of instant message, so we're very available to each other. It's not that we all work in a vacuum and we only come together once a week or every 2 weeks. We are in constant contact, and so we use all kinds of technology like instant message, Skype. We do our staff meetings every other week on Skype, and we all log in at the exact same time, and we have a format that we go through sharing, you know, what our successes were, what our opportunities are, and what our connections are to our clients, to our candidates every single week. Then we meet in person every alternate week up at Rome, which I think you're familiar mm-hmm. with. Radio X was used to have their home there. And we rent a virtual office, an office there. And that allows us that face-to-face time as well. So we've kind of got a nice mix of totally virtual during the workday. We come together for group conferences every week. And then, every other week we actually meet in person. And then sometimes there are special occasions where we'll have other types of meetings that are called. But that gives us, I think, you have accountability, but you also have freedom. I can pull reports. I don't do it very often, but if I do feel that there is shenanigans, you know, it's all there in black and white. Right. But the trust is really the most important thing. I feel like the more I trust my staff, the more they want to perform.
Right. Well, okay. Well, we've all had this experience, though, where we want to trust somebody and we want to believe people are basically good and all of that, but yet we've all been let down. We've all been burned. What are some of the downsides potentially to running a virtual business like this that you need to be aware of and thinking about?
One of the main things is training, and that is always a challenge because you're not physically with them, but you have to train them even to a higher level on the technologies that you provide or that you expect them to use. That might mean anything from their cell phone and how to sync in with the database on there, as well as the software that you provide, the phone system. We have voice over IP. We have, you know, Dropbox. We have all kinds of tools. And I do find that there are varying levels of knowledge. And there is some assumptions, and I've been caught in it myself, where I assume that everybody knew how to use it at the level that I did. And then I find in one of our Skype meetings, I said, well, you know, you can just go here, here, here. And they're like, what? I didn't even know the software could do that. I said, how have you been using it for 6 months without knowing that? And so then that comes back to me, and I realize, wow, I can't assume that we're all structuring our day or using the software, you know, in the maximum fashion. So then it just comes down to communication. You've got to sit and have one-on-ones with people and see, how do you structure your day? Let me see you, you know, run through. For us, it's run through a search or go through to log your calls on the database to make sure that everybody is trained the same.
All right, let me ask you about managing this piece, because this one I'm kind of fresh with, because just last night my mother called me, and there was a problem with her computer, and she needed help. And I don't know if you've ever tried to talk your mother through.
Right?
So if you're managing this virtual team, I mean, how do you, is it obviously dependent on some technology? How do you manage the support piece there?
Well, we're luckily an all Mac environment. So technical support is more minimal. If you're going to work for me, you're going to have to use a Mac. We do screen sharing the screen, so I can jump on their computer and I can actually see their desktop, and I act as a tech support that way. I happen to be kind of a tech geek in that world. If you didn't have anybody at the company, yourself or one of your staff members who could kind of step into that role, then you definitely need to outsource that, because your technology is your lifeblood. If one person goes down, I mean, there's no spare computer. If, you know, we've had this situation in a storm where 2-3 people are without electricity, and that's like your half of your company can't work today. So that's when having a virtual office like a Roam or at your fingertips, since you need to jump on a laptop and you need to run to Starbucks and you need to still work. And so those are the downsides that you...
And even if you are tech savvy, you kind of got to be careful, I guess, about being sucked into that too, though, because sometimes, I mean, and I know this because I'm a problem solver, so I can get sucked in really quick.
Oh, yes.
Right? You can spend a tremendous amount of time that you should be doing something else and probably have that outsource on staff.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm like you. I can fall prey to wanting to fix that glitch and to fix that why it won't screen share or why we can't conference call today. It's like I will get sucked in. So I'm the first to admit that you have to focus on what I always think. There's a wonderful book called The E-Myth Revisited by Michael Gerber. And everybody who's going to start a business, I think, should read that book probably twice and then maybe take the online class. It is absolutely the Bible of starting your own business. And one of the things they talk about in that book and another one I've read about time management is, if you figure out what your billable rate is, let's just say you calculate it based on what you pay yourself, how many hours you plan to work in a week, and it may not be 40, it may only be 30. Let's just say you come up and you say, okay, my billable rate is $75 an hour. Then why am I spending 6 hours a week on $10 an hour tasks? And that's when you really know that's not the best use of your time. I know you can do it, and you can do it technically for free, but it's not free.
That's such a absolute perfect topic. We talked about that many, many times here on the show, about not knowing the value of your time and lending it to things that just do not equate out. So I'm really glad to hear you make that point.
We fall victim in our company to a lot of instant message interruptions. It's a great lifeline to your, you know, we're a company of 7 people. So to keep in touch and to give a message, sometimes we just jump on instant message. And the good part is it's there. You can talk to your coworker. You can get information shared very quickly. However, every time you send an instant message, that person has to stop what they're doing and respond. So we are constantly trying to actually turn it off for certain times of the day and say, you know what, I need you to leave me alone for 2 hours, because every time you interrupt me, we remind each other that you're actually reaching onto my desk and taking money off of my table. You're taking money out of my pocket every time you interrupt me. And we have to constantly remind ourselves of that.
Yeah. Well, that can be a training thing, too. I mean, you know, training people to send a message, and if they don't get an instant reply, to realize the person on the other side's busy, you know, or training someone, hey, if you get pinged, ding, ding, it's because it's important, you know.
Exactly. And so that's a good thing to remember, especially when you have multiple people and they're all, you know, I forget, they're pinging me, but they're all pinging each other. So we're just, you know, we've got to, you know, you got to turn it off and say, look, I need to focus. And these are my key earning hours of the day, from, you know, 9 to 11 every day. I need to be on the phone.
Right.
I need to be talking to clients, talking to candidates. And those are the types of things that, where that higher level of employee, that self-directed, disciplined person, not only yourself, but the people that you hire, that's when it really comes into play for the virtual office environment.
Yeah, I think the number is roughly, right around 7 minutes an interruption will cost you, from the 2 minutes that it interrupts you before to the 4 minutes you spend working on it to the minute it takes you to get back to work.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And, you know, if you've got a little case of ADD, you know, you can really get thrown off your game every time you're interrupted. Now, I can be interrupted a million times and go right back to what I'm doing. But not everybody can do that. And I forget that not everybody can do that. And I think, what's your problem? You know, you just look away from the instant message and you're back to where you were. But it really can break people's train of thought.
Makes a lot of sense. So, you know, thinking about the e-myth and that, you know, business owners and entrepreneurs should read that and use it as a platform, what are some good and bad? What are some things that you think that entrepreneurs do right early, and what are some things you think they do absolutely wrong early?
Well, most entrepreneurs, at least the ones that I come into contact with, usually did this because they either got laid off or they fired their boss and said, I can do this without you. And that's great. You have the gumption. You're fired up. You know, kind of screw the man. I'm not going to work for the man. Then you realize you're the man. And then, so then you become, you need to be, and this is what the e-myth really breaks down, is that there are three roles. And one is the technician. And we usually come into starting our own business as the technician. I was a recruiter before. I come in, I'm the money stream. I am performing the searches. I'm the billable entity of the company. But I couldn't last very long doing that and grow the company at the same time, because I had to step into a manager role. And the next role up was bringing someone in underneath me to do the recruiting, where I then manage the recruiting process. Then I realized I couldn't even do that very long independently. I needed to be really the company's visionary. And that means I need to take this company on a broad spectrum and really try to grow it strategically. That piece is what you really can't outsource to anyone else. You, the business owner, have to be the visionary. Then you find people who will be your managers and your technicians. But we all enter as the technician, generally. You've got the skill set, and that's what you were hired to do in your previous company, and you want to go do it for yourself now. So those are some of the mistakes, then, are trying to do all three and not realizing when your time is better spent outsourcing some of those tasks. I hate accounting. I hate insurance. I hate payroll. And I couldn't outsource those things fast enough. But it was an expensive time for me because I wasn't a big enough company, yet I knew that I would be bogged down in things that I wasn't good at and probably mess them up. So it was better that I just outsource them. Maybe I make less for a little while, but let me focus on what I know I can do. And I can recruit like nobody's business, and I can manage people, and I can grow this company strategically. But I don't want to be bogged down in FITA and CETA and SUTA and taxes, and that's not where my strengths are. So coming to that realization as quickly as you possibly can will benefit you in the long run.
What about, you know, when you think about business, if there's no money coming in, you can't outsource anything. So what do you say to these entrepreneurs that say, well, I'm really good at recruiting, but I don't want to go pressure anybody. I don't know how to sell, or I don't want to go sell. But what do they do?
I don't know. Man, if you don't want to sell, then you should work for someone else. You know,
yes,
if you
ding,
just
want to
stay
ding,
as the technician, you know, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Not everybody is cut out for this. I mean, I have a lot of gray hair that I didn't think I would ever have, because I was forced to deal with areas that I was protected from as an employee of a larger company. I knew I was a good recruiter. That was easy. But did I know anything about payroll, accounting, profit and loss, balance sheets, cash flow analysis? Heck no. And I had to learn it. So I outsourced my bookkeeping. For 4 years, I've had a wonderful kind of rent a CFO, a gentleman named Adrian Bevan from Third Eye Management. I highly recommend bringing in somebody who can come in with a fresh set of eyes, pull your numbers for you, sit and force you to go line by line down your P&L and not only make sense of it for you, but tell you where you need to make adjustments. And that kind of discipline, and it's like, it was like pulling teeth. I mean, I would wake up and it would be my financial meeting. Oh, God, can I do anything other than this? But as soon as I was done, I realized it's like going to the dentist. You don't want to go, but you know you need to. And then you realize, you know what? It wasn't that bad. Right. And he got me through a lot of really low points. I mean, we were in business and fighting for our life in 2008, 9, 10, just like everybody. And, you know, if I hadn't had that safety net in place, someone to really help me watch those numbers, yeah, I'm sure we'd be out of business today. It was a tough time.
Yeah, well, the dentist is a great analogy to use because it goes to another conventional thought process, which is the broke fix mindset that a lot of business owners get into. You know, my finances are broken, I need to get someone to fix them. Whereas if they had a regular maintenance plan, they were seeing their dentist on a regular basis, getting cleanings, checkups, et cetera.
Exactly.
You probably wouldn't have those long sessions in the seat.
It's exactly that. And to just identify what you're not good at, I think that would be my first advice to anyone setting up their own business. And my second thing that they should do is set up a community. And that is a support group that is there to help you in areas where you're not strong, or just other business owners that are out there in the trenches like you are. And when I first started in the first year, I set up a group called the Success Club. And I reached out to solopreneurs, business owners, and all kinds of different people in my industry at different levels, mostly business owners. And we all met once a month around my dining room table, and everybody brought different troubles, different advice, different forms. We had all kinds of strategic analysis things that they would help, but they brought from their previous employers. And we used to really support each other. We had a Yahoo group that we would talk in, and that really helped. That support group of the people you need in your life, the cheerleaders, all the different people. And there's supposedly a Forbes article about the six people that you need in your life. I have not read it. I just heard about it the other day, and I'm going to go read it. But I think it's really important to surround yourself with people, not just your mama who's going to tell you everything's going to be okay and that you're wonderful. You need some people from different backgrounds as you to come in and advise you.
Well, here's a good question that you probably have some experience with the answer here. And when you think about this support group, one of the number one things that I hear floating around the business community is that people get in these support groups and they typically get in there with either a friend or a client, someone that they know, and it causes them not to open up. They don't really want to pull back the curtain and reveal what's mm-hmm. really going on so that they can deal with the issues in the business. They kind of put on the face, right? Like, hey, how's everything going? It's great, right?
Exactly.
It's not great. How do you deal with that?
I used to say that in 2009. Was that a really crummy year? I forget which year was the worst in all of that. But I remember if anybody told me, oh, yeah, we're doing great, I said, you're a liar. We are all dying. And I was the first to admit it. I was like, yeah, we're sucking wind. You know, how are you even making it? And then you could really get down to an honest and open communication. So, yeah, you have to pick your support group. You know, get people who aren't there to just tell you it's going to be okay. And to be your cheerleader is one thing, but you need someone who is going to pull back that curtain and tell you some ugly truths. And I had that with my CFO guy. Now, he was, of course, a paid person. He wasn't just a friend, but that was what he was so valuable to do, is to tell me the things that not only did I not understand, but I wouldn't have wanted to face. And it paid off.
Right. So if you're a business owner, how do you know it's time to bring someone in, to do that outsourcing, or maybe even add staff in this virtual company idea?
You know, I remember when I first made that decision, and it was when I realized that this business would never grow beyond what my two hands could touch. And I thought, if I don't fill the job, if I don't key it into the database, if I don't pick up the phone, it's just not going to happen. And I realized I could do a lot more if I had an extra set of hands. And then it came down to that, you know, $75 an hour versus $10. It's like, if I'm keying in, you know, Excel spreadsheets and things like that, that's not the best use of my time. And so it came to me to work-life balance. I could have worked 80-hour weeks and done it all. But I knew that the reason I started this business was not to work 80-hour weeks. It was to have a work-life balance and to not only achieve my personal goals, but business goals as well. So that was when I just realized that this business will never grow beyond what I can physically touch and do and say. And that's what I didn't want. I wanted this. I didn't put my own name in the title of the company because I didn't want it to be so tied to me that it couldn't grow beyond me. And I wanted that. And I think a lot of people are very fearful of not touching everything that their company puts out. And holding onto the reins that tight will stifle you and strangle you. I remember my lead recruiter is Virginia Farley. She's been with me since almost the first couple of months. I got her very early. But I remember the first time that a client came in and a placement was made, and I had never talked to the client and I'd never talked to the candidate. And I thought, wow, this is truly now a business and not Nancy Bailey's little recruiting thing out of her back bedroom. It's like, this is real. And then I got excited.
Yeah, that's awesome. I bet that was a tremendous feeling.
It was. It was. And, you know, and it comes too with money. Sometimes I wasn't looking at the books like I should. Now, of course, I was looking at them, but more on a weekly basis. What did we bring in this week? Can we all eat this week? Then I was nominated for the Catalyst magazine's top 25. Well, they have a special category called Ones to Watch. And I won in 2007, I think. And they had asked me to pull all of my numbers. And I looked at them. I thought, oh, I'm a million-dollar company. She's like, you didn't know? I said, no. And I said, I really hadn't. You know, I was just with my head down. I was just working. I figured I'll just keep working on every job like it's the last job I'll ever place. And then sure enough, I looked up and I was a million-dollar company and I didn't realize it. And it was very exciting.
Yeah, well, it has to be. It's better than looking up and going, uh-oh.
Uh-oh. Believe me, there's been some uh-oh days. Don't worry.
Well, Nancy, what do you think the future is for virtual companies? I mean, is that the wave of the future for small business?
I do. I mean, I think there's pros and cons for each. Just like how we're seeing so many companies that were strictly brick and mortar, like the Blockbusters of the world, be replaced by the Netflix. That, to me, is a perfect macrocosm of what I think is happening with other businesses. Whereas when I first started, even as a recruiter, and you found out that a designer worked out of their basement, I mean, my first thought was, well, you rinky-dink, two-bit, you know, no good. And now, that is the absolute norm. And if you are forced to be one of those people that has to go into a company, the people who are working out of their basement are like, ha ha. You know, so it has completely shifted. Whereas working from home is now coveted. People are jealous of you. People really seek that. And even people who do have traditional brick and mortar jobs have negotiated at least one or two days where they can work from home. And so even it's slipping into every kind of company. There is more work from home. There's more telecommuting. There's more electronic communication, which, again, there's a downside. One of the things that I learned is that I have to cut off the time that I am willing to check my phone, check my email. And for me, it's about 6:30, you know, and I say, that's it. I have my voice over IP. It automatically goes straight to voicemail after, I think, 6:30 or 7 p.m. So I can't get a work phone call on my work line in my home in the evening. It's just, you'll have to wait till the next business day. And you have to take vacations, and those vacations can't be focations where you've got all of your devices and you're checking and you're taking client calls by the pool. No, you've got to unplug, because if you work from home, you're already crossing into that gray area. You know, some people, they have a laptop and they work all over their house. There's probably papers all over their house. I don't. It does not leave the room that is dedicated to my office, and that's me. I'm very particular about not having work spread all over, because I want that clear division that I used to have when I worked for a company. I still want that division now. So you have to kind of guard yourself about that.
Well, here's the topic we won't go into today, but maybe for a future show. We need to figure out, with all these people doing virtual companies, working from home and telecommuting, who the heck are all these people on the highway every morning jamming up the interstates, right?
All I can say is that I have 7 people who are not in your way, and I'm proud of that.
You're not contributing to the problem.
I am not contributing to the problem.
Well, Nancy, let's say that I've got somebody out there listening who says, you know what, I need to staff somebody for my creative side. I need some help in that arena, need somebody to outsource a project to or whatever, or maybe they just want some more guidance about virtual companies. How do they go about getting in touch with you?
Well, you can go to our website, which is www.hire-profile.com, You can like us on Facebook, which is just Higher Profile. You can follow us on Twitter, which is Higher_Profile. Or you can call us the old-fashioned way at 404-806-2285. And you'll actually get a real live person.
Well, semi-old-fashioned because it's still over VoIP, right?
Well, yeah, but you wouldn't know that.
You don't know that,
real
right?
extensions and real voicemail. And
real people and none of those difficult menus to navigate. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Well, Nancy, again, thank you so much for being on the show today,
Andy,
and sharing with our
guests.
Awesome. For those of you out there listening, hope you got some valuable information today. I personally am a huge proponent of the virtual office and the virtual team. I think you can work with a lot of really great people, and I am all for pitching the brick and mortar and getting rid of that expense. A lot of companies start in the hole so deep every month that it's a wonder they're able to overcome the overhead and make any profit at all. So if you're struggling, look at that as a major cutback. Go virtual, expand your team, and grow your resources. As always, I am your host, Andy Lowe. This has been Renegade Radio, brought to you by Renegade Concepts, and you can find us on the web at renegadeconcepts.com, as well as the good folks here at Business Radio X. Tune in and listen to our previous shows at renegaderadio.businessradiox.com. And remember out there, opportunity lies in the impossible, but you have to be willing to break the rules of conventional thinking. Until next time.